Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. This is Rob Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick.
Today, this is an exciting entry in the Weird House Cinema catalog because we are going to be covering our first film from India. It's always fun when we can dive into a new film culture, a new national film tradition. And I know for me personally, Indian cinema, Bollywood in particular, this is a whole area of film that I really don't have much, if any, exposure to. So I was excited to watch this movie, research it a bit, because not only is it Bollywood, it is Bollywood horror. We're going to be talking about Purana Mandir, if not only a horror movie, but like the horror movie from India from 1984.
This is also my first full viewing of a Bollywood movie. I've watched a lot of clips from them before. Often, like people will clip out really great musical numbers from them and put them online. So I've seen plenty of those. But this was the first time I've seen the whole thing. But man, this movie was mostly great, at some points awful, and really got my mind cranking about what it means to have musical numbers in a film.
Yes, because if you don't know anything or you don't know much about Indian cinema and Bollywood in particular, you may know that there are musical numbers, some big song and dance numbers. And I think at times this can be like knowing this can be kind of like a barrier to entry. You might think, well, I don't know if I'm up for that. I mean, I'm not a musical fan. Or even if you decide, oh, well, there's a horror genre, I want to get into that. But then you realize there are musical numbers, maybe you're going to hold back. But yeah, it's interesting to sort of break that down. Like, well, how different is that from anything we watch over here? You know, we have a genre of musical, obviously, that goes in various directions. But also we have strong musical segments in various pictures where you'll feature a particular track. It just maybe you don't have characters actually singing that song.
Yes, I agree with all of that. I mean, it really got me thinking, why don't American horror movies tend to have musical numbers in them? And if they did, why would we say, well, actually, this is just a totally different genre now. It is a musical. Why couldn't all genres have musical numbers? Because as you say, music features in other movies, diegetic and non-diegetic music features in, as long as the characters aren't singing, it's not a musical. But there's no particular reason I could think of why the fact that characters do sing in a movie should make that a separate genre from whatever the narrative content is. So yeah, I think we should have more fantasy, sci-fi movies, whatever, horror movies that have characters singing songs, because songs are great. Now that I've experienced a Bollywood film, it in no way takes away from my enjoyment of this as a cheesy horror movie. And I don't really see why you would resist. I think maybe there's one impulse that says like musical numbers could take away from the seriousness of the film. There's another that says it could take away from the quote realism. I'd say if you're overly concerned with either of those, maybe you shouldn't be making a horror movie.
I think another sort of barrier to entry or sort of expectation is that might be for many. And it was kind of this way for me, is I expected going into a musical number to be clunkier and take me out of the picture more. Mm-hmm. And there are sections of the film that do manage to take me out of the picture and are clunky. But the musical numbers, like you get the impression like this is down to like an art just in Indian cinema in general. And so if a movie's going into a musical number, they know what they're doing. They like it's you're going to have a smooth takeoff and landing with the emotional arc of whatever that particular song happens to be.
Every time a song kicked in, I was like, okay, now we're cooking. Even the kind of sad, slower paced songs.
Yeah, yeah, because it's not coming out of nowhere. It's coming out of what's going on emotionally with the characters, or especially towards the end of this picture with like the driving nature of the plot.
Oh, yes. The human sacrifice song, I think, was my favorite song in the movie.
All right. So, again, this was my first Bollywood film. I'd never watched one in its entirety like you had seen some clips. So I had to do a little extra reading about everything. There's a lot of things about Bollywood cinema that I was not familiar with and just did not know about. So, for instance, bear with me if you already knew all of this, but when we talk about Bollywood cinema, we're talking about films specifically coming out of the Mumbai film industry. Mumbai, formerly known as Bombay, you get it like Bombay plus Hollywood equals Bollywood. Mm-hmm. And while it's perhaps the most well-known internationally of the various Indian film centers, Indian cinema is not a monolith. Like India itself, India cinema consists of various languages and cultures, and in the different cinematic traditions and centers have like different strengths, different histories, and so forth. So with some of the various extras on the disc or discs that we looked at for this, as well as some articles, it was a real learning experience for me to familiarize myself somewhat with this. I mean, it goes beyond genre, with this just whole realm of cinema.
By the way, just as one example of other film subcultures of India, I know there is also the so-called Tollywood, which refers to Tollywood with a T, referring to films made in the Telugu language, which is one of the many languages of India.
Yeah, yeah. And then likewise, you have in Pakistan, you have Lollywood that is centered in Lahore. I didn't know anything about Lollywood either until I started absorbing some of these extras on these discs. But this film, Purana Mandir from 84, is very much Bollywood. It is a Bollywood film. It is a Bollywood horror film. And it's going to be interesting to discuss exactly what all of that means, because to a very large degree, the filmmakers here, the Ramsey brothers, are pushing into an area that had traditionally been less successful and more sort of fringe within Bollywood cinema. But still, it's going to have things in it that are very much part of the Bollywood blueprint. And that includes a compelling story of star-crossed lovers, a fair amount of family melodrama, multiple music numbers. Now, this was interesting. I was looking at an excerpt where it was an interview with the critic Omar Khan, and he pointed out that 8 or so musical numbers per movie is pretty standard.
Oh, so this seems under the average, right? I think there were maybe 5 in this movie. Is that right?
I lost count after a little while, just because I'm not used to seeing any in my horror. Mm-hmm. But I saw something where he was talking about a later Ramsey Brothers film where he's like, well, there are only 4 musical numbers in this, which may seem like a lot to outsiders, but like really, it's like a half load. But on top of the music, and on top of the horror, which we'll get to, we also have martial arts action. You got a little dancing. You've got some comedic segments. Which we're probably not going to talk about too much, other than to say they are awful. All of this comes together into what felt to me, it's kind of like a circus, right? It's like you go to a circus, there are going to be a number of acts. You may not be there primarily to see the clowns. You may be there to see the trapeze act, but the clowns are going to be there because somebody came with the expectation of clowns. Within talk of Bollywood film in particular, I've seen this described as masala film. That is, you know, a reference to the spice blend. You know, you're going to the theater to see this show, and by golly, it needs to deliver a little something for everyone. A little of this spice, a little of that, all under the big top of cinema.
Now, if it sounds like that's a lot to fit into one movie, it is. This is a long movie. This is definitely the longest movie we've covered on Weird House, right?
Yeah, it beats out Blade by 20 minutes, which I think is important to keep that in mind, because it's not absurdly long. Like, there are plenty of longer Bollywood films, and there are plenty of longer Western films as well. Avatar 2 is longer than Piranha Mandir. So, you know, don't necessarily let the length, you know, keep you away from these films. And there's an intermission, too. So you got that going for you.
Love an intermission.
Now, the disc we watched this on, and I'll give a full mention of that in just a bit here, has an introduction from Indian horror expert Tim Paxton. He provides the intro, and he points out that Piranha Mandir is one of the most important films in Bollywood history, and probably the most important film in the history of Indian horror cinema specifically. And one of the interesting things here is produced on a very modest budget, but it was a colossal hit. I was looking at some of the numbers, and if I was doing my math correctly, it like multiplied its budget in revenue on the scale of something like Rocky or Blair Witch Project. Like that level of success just did amazing business.
Have you read anything from somebody who knows about the Bollywood market, like what audiences responded to so much about this movie in particular? Like, why was it so popular?
Well, Omar Khan gets into this a little bit on some of the extras from this this Blu-ray set. And a lot of it kind of comes down to luck. You know, the Ramses at this point had been pumping out horror content since 72, I believe. And none of those films had certainly had anything like this success. But they were out there. It was on the fringes, you know. And so, I mean, I guess part of it is like by this point, they definitely knew what they were doing with a number of these elements. They knew how to put together things. They knew how to do the masala film offering. So they did have a little bit of for everybody. And I don't know, it was just like the right time. Like audiences just really responded to it. And he described it as being like a generational date movie. Mm. Like if you were going to cinemas in India during this time period, you saw this movie. And it was also, he points out, you know, probably going to be, especially for how mainstream it became, it was offering things people just hadn't seen before, because Western horror films could only really enter into like the general zeitgeist there so much, because they weren't coming in on like satellite TV or anything. They were coming in on it. They weren't being shown in the theater for the most part. They were coming in on VHS tapes, and those were in rare, you know, and those were hard to get. Only certain people had access to those. Mm-hmm. And so this is a film that has some really scary stuff in it. And you can just imagine how much more scary it is if you didn't have direct exposure to, say, The Exorcist or the first Evil Dead movie or something like that.
I can also see how it would be such a great date movie, since it has, you know, it's like scary. So the classic cliche is it gets you hugging close because, you know, because Sam Raimi's out here about to do something evil. But it's also got a great love story.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got a romance at the heart of it. You've got family melodrama at the heart of it. You've got the music. You've got the comedy. You've got the dancing girl. You've got all these things that any given viewer is going to be wanting to see out of a Bollywood film. But it's also offering something that is new. And the newness ends up being key, because this kicks off a horror boom in India. The Ramsey brothers end up pumping out a lot of additional horror films. They have competitors and also, you know, other folks just jump in to try and ride that bandwagon. And it actually, they end up writing it out by something like, I want to say, 92. So the boom doesn't last too long. But during that time, everybody gets in there. And some of the films are supposed to be quite good, but there's a sort of sameness to everything. And after a while, people have seen it, and it loses that new edge that this film seemed to have.
I think a similar thing happened with some of the biggest money-making horror films in the United States in the 80s also. Kind of the slasher formula got repeated and played out to death.
Yeah, or later on, speaking of Blair Witch, the found footage formula, because, you know, that's a case where for the most part, people hadn't really seen a film like this. Mm-hmm. It was produced on a very low budget, made tremendous money, and lots of folks jumped in there to try and recreate that success. And goodness, off the top of my head, I'm not sure anybody really did. I think it's a good comparison, though only in terms of like sort of business and impact, not so much style.
I think following the Blair Witch model, the Paranormal Activity franchise did pretty good.
Okay.
I think. I'm trying to think of another one. I don't know. The found footage style is obviously very appealing because it's cheap to make. But when people were trying to just make, you know, cash in on found footage movies with very uninspired ideas, I think a lot of them missed out on how creative the original Blair Witch Project actually was.
Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of like written across the horror genre, wherever you look, right? A successful horror movie comes out and somebody's going to think, I can do that. Horror is easy. Horror films can't be that hard to do. And there is an art to it. There is a certain amount of style, and then there's a certain amount of luck to hitting things just right. And that's what Piranha Mandir seems to have done. Now, let's see, just a couple of other notes. Paxton points out that this movie, which deals specifically with a resurrected, evil, decapitated wizard, does draw heavily on two prior films, one American and one Spanish. 1958's The Thing That Couldn't Die, that stars Robin Hughes as the wizard Gideon Drew, and 1972's Horror Rises from the Tomb, starring Paul Naschy as the wizard Alaric de Marnac. This is a film, of course, we discussed on Weird House Cinema.
I did not expect that. Yeah, Paul Naschy plays the wizard. He's actually part of an evil sorcerer power couple in Horror Rises from the Tomb, right? He has a wife or a girlfriend who's also a powerful wizard.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Paul Naschy films is Paul Naschy monsters, you're supposed to feel some sort of sympathy for. You know, that's where he's coming from. He's coming from that love of universal horror and sympathy for the monster. The wizard in this film, Somri, is unlovable. He is just a complete monster. Every crime that is committable, he has done. We are not meant to have any sympathy at all for Somri. And ultimately, I have to say, even though the early stages of the film do, like the historical opening does kind of mirror the opening of Horror Rises from the Tomb, it ultimately goes in its own direction, as opposed to being anything like a clone of that movie.
Well, on one hand, yes, I agree. Somri is not sympathetic at all in terms of the narrative. He doesn't have like a tragic love story or anything like that. There's nothing likable about him except just his physical vibe. Like the presence of the actor who plays Somri in the opening is so cool.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the performance here by AJ Agrawal is tremendous. And this is a role that launched him as like a true monster actor for Indian horror cinema.
We'll have to come back to him.
Yeah, we'll come back to him for sure, because he's a delight. There are long stretches of the film where he's not there, but when he is there, he's tremendous. All right, just a couple other small points before we get to the trailer, basically. The film is predominantly in Hindi, though the characters do throw in a little English here and there, and the action ventures into a rural setting, so you'll hear some characters speaking another dialect or language. It's referenced in the Hindi dialogue as well, but I couldn't find an indicator of which language this is.
I noticed something interesting in the movie where a couple of times somebody would say something in Hindi and then they would say the same thing again in English, almost as if for emphasis. And I don't know if that's like something specific to Bollywood movies or just a quirk of this movie in particular or a convention of Hindi language in general. I don't know, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. With that specifically and just generally out there, we'd love to hear from listeners after this episode. If you have more experience with Bollywood cinema, if you speak Hindi, if you have experience with the theater experience of going to these films, all of that is on the table. Because I've heard it pointed out that it's one thing to watch like a Bollywood film or a Bollywood horror film in your living room by yourself. But that, of course, was not how they intended a film like this to be viewed. No, this was to be viewed in the theater.
Can you imagine how much fun it would have been to like see this in a packed theater of like young people out on date night?
Oh, yeah. And can you imagine how afraid people were? If you hadn't seen many horror films and you had to see Samri, I mean, he's terrifying. Almost all the time on the screen, he's at least unnerving, if not just outright terrifying. All right. Well, I mean, the elevator pitch on this one is basically it's the biggest Bollywood horror film of them all. It's the granddaddy of Bollywood horror films. It's your basic evil wizard, multi-generational family curse romance film with added music and comedy. We have a trailer here. I don't think we're going to play it all, but we'll play at least a nice sampling of this so you can get sort of an audio taste of what's ahead.
खानदान की खुशियों पर एक ऐसा बदनुमा दाग है
ये कोई शैतानी ताकत नहीं एक शरारत है हमें यहां से भगाने की तरकीब है
अगर हवेली और पुराने मंदिर की गहराई तक जाने की कोशिश करोगे तो हमेशा के लिए बात के अंधेरे में गुम हो जाओगे
All right, well. Before we go any further, if you would like to watch this movie for yourself, if you'd like to check out here, go and see it, and then come back to the rest of the episode, well, you don't have to depend on some sort of weird stream to view this film, because there's a wonderful Bollywood horror limited edition box set that is out from Mondo Macabro. And I checked out a couple of discs from this, the disc for this film and then a disc for another movie that had some extras on it. And we rented these discs from Atlanta's own Videodrome rental store.
It's a great print, though it does warn you that there will be some variable quality in different scenes of the movie due to just like storage issues with the film over the years. So the restoration is a bit patchy in places, but for the most part, it looks great.
Yeah, there's one particular, I don't even know what to call it, but there's some sort of an error in the final print that we have on the disc here that has almost kind of a psychedelic quality to it. And I don't think I'd seen it on a film before, this particular kind of noise. So it's very watchable. Nothing in this gets in the way of your enjoyment of the movie.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats. Even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
All right, well, let's jump into the people involved here. The main ones to really highlight here are the Ramsey brothers, the directors. It's impossible to discuss Indian horror cinema without discussing the Ramsey brothers. Again, they had been doing this since 72, and this is the movie that kicked off an enormous boom in Indian cinema for horror and even like contemporary horror movies. They still have connections to the work of the Ramsey brothers here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ramsey brothers, I think, can at times refer to just different sons and grandsons of F.U. Ramsey. But in particular, the directors here are Shyam Ramsey and Tulsi Ramsey. Shyam lived 52 through 2019, and Tulsi lived 1944 through 2018. Other Ramsey brothers would get in on the directing game at times, like Kishu and Kiran. But yeah, these are the main two we're talking about. They're the ones who directed horror films in the early 70s, beginning with a 1972 film. The title for this one translates to 2 Yards Under the Ground. So already like kind of a grim beginning there. They followed this up with a string of horror and creature films. There's one from 82, Matka Saya. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but it looks interesting to me because it has some sort of a like big creature water monster in it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure this one is available widely in the West, but I put it on my radar because it looks interesting. Neat monster anyway. But anyway, all of these films that they were putting out, these were outliers. The horror pictures just weren't viewed as culturally viable. They weren't seen as potentially anything that would make money at the box office. So it was more fringe stuff. And, you know, a lot of these pictures, particularly Ramsey productions at the time, they were also pushing boundaries of what was accepted in Hindi cinema. At the time, as Omar Khan points out, most Indian film viewers had little or no exposure to Western horror films, and Indian horror films were barely a thing. In fact, I saw an interview with A.J. Agarwal, the main monster actor in this picture, and he said that he didn't know the difference between horror films and regular films before being cast by the Ramseys. Like, that's how little horror was established in, like, the general audience's mind.
Hmm.
But with this movie, again, it hits at just the right time, takes off, 1984, becomes a huge hit. A generational date movie, as Khan describes it, sets off this massive boom that doesn't really subside till 92. The Ramseys continue to ply their trade, tons of competitors and imitators trying to get in on the craze as well, until overexposure kicks in and the boom dies out. The Ramseys followed this movie up with 1985's Telephone, 1985's 3D Samri.
What?
Which is obviously the 3D sequel of sorts to this movie.
Well, but I thought the evil wizard was destroyed at the end of this movie.
If an evil wizard makes you enough money, there's no destroying him. He will come back. There's a 19, and I haven't seen 3D Samri. I assume it's Samri because it's the title, is the name of the character. But, you know, sometimes a movie like this, maybe it's not a direct sequel. Maybe it's a spiritual sequel. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a slew of interesting looking features that they came out with in the wake of Purana Mandir, including Takhana from 86, Virana from 88, Purani Haveli from 89, and 1990s Bond Darwaza, which is said to be quite good, more of a traditional Dracula style film. And after that, the well kind of dries up. One of their last big films, if not their last big film, was a 1994 movie titled Mahakal, which a number of you might be familiar with because it is To be kind, it is very inspired by Nightmare on Elm Street. It is at least a strong homage to Nightmare on Elm Street and features a Freddy Krueger-esque character on the cover. So I think this one has gotten some amount of traction. If nothing else, you might have seen some clips or the poster art.
It does have a guy with knives for fingers.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, if you're not sure like how to spell that title and you want to look it up, just do a search for like Bollywood Freddy Krueger and you'll find it. All right, the screenplay on this one was written by another Ramsey, Kumar Ramsey, who lived 36 through 2021. He was the screenwriter in a number of their films. This is one of those situations where, you know, the brothers and the family here, they'll often draw on some of the same talent. So this Ramsey also wrote Samri 3D and a movie called Guest House. There are also three other contributors also credited here, but I couldn't find out much about them. But there's a story credit, there's a dialogue credit, and there's an assistant dialogue writer. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into the cast. So we've talked about him already, but AJ Agarwal, I believe AJ is short for Anirudh. He was born in 1949. As of this recording, is still out there. I think he's retired now. But yes, he plays our dark wizard of evil, who's eventually going to rise from the tomb and get his head back and go on a rampage. Yeah, he only acted in three Ramsey Brothers films. He played a monster in two of them, in Piranha Mandir, of course, in the follow-up Samri 3D or 3D Samri in 85. He also played more of a traditional Dracula in that 1990 film, Bandh Darwaza. And he continued to act through 2010. Is retired now, but mostly, just almost exclusively in Hindi films. But he does have a role in Stephen Sommers' The Jungle Book from 1994.
Hmm.
I included a picture here for you, Joe. As you can see, he's playing a heavy of some sort. And in this, he's standing next to the villain holding Lena Headey by the arms.
Well, that's also Cary Elwes. I know all three of these actors. I don't think I would have recognized a single one of them in this screenshot.
Yeah, they're very young. I mean, especially Lena. I wouldn't have recognized her. But anyway, yeah, he's in it. He's very tall. He was like 6'4", 6'5". So, yeah, especially among a lot of actors, he's pretty towering. And he has just very pronounced features. I've read this might have been due to like some sort of underlying medical condition as well that sort of gave him pronounced facial features. Also, yeah, again, very tall. And based on, I read an article about him and I was looking at an interview conducted with him. And he made two goes at getting into acting before and after earning like a civil engineering certificate or degree of some sort. But at both times he didn't have any luck until he had some sort of ill health or injury while working in Mumbai. And he looked even more haggard afterwards. I'm not sure if he had some sort of like facial bruising or whatever the case may be. But someone came up to him and said, "Hey, you look pretty tough. You should be in movies." And he's like, "Well, that's what I've been trying to do, but nobody will hire me." And they say, "Well, you know what? You need to go talk to the Ramsey Brothers because they will give you a chance." And so he went. He talked to the Ramsey Brothers, and the Ramsey Brothers at that point were apparently 6 months into shooting Piranha Mandir, but they hadn't done any of the horror sequences yet.
What?
I guess they didn't even have a Samri cast.
Wow.
And they'd leaned heavily on masks and makeup in previous films, but then in walks a man who doesn't need as much makeup, you know? And like we've seen this in, you know, time and time again in various horror cinema periods and settings where somebody comes in and they just have that unique look where you don't have to do much to them, you know, just a subtle amount of makeup and right lighting and the right lighting and effects, and you're already in the horror realm. And that's what he offered to them here.
It's interesting because, as we were saying earlier, this character is in no way likable or sympathetic. They just make him an absolute demon, like pure evil, not like charismatic or anything, except in the opening sequence before he gets transformed into a more Frankenstein type creature. The like human Samri evokes strong rock star charisma. He has kind of a shaggy Keith Richards haircut, mm-hmm. the back of his shirt sparkles. It's got this like sequin Wolfman motif. It looks kind of like something David Bowie would have worn. And he's just like tall and has a kind of, you know, lead guitarist posture. I don't know. He seems very cool.
Yeah, he's at least a head taller than everybody around him. At times, he kind of felt like he had kind of a Boris Karloff kind of a presence to him, you know, and, you know, and also reminds me of various other, you know, actors with unique appearances. But yeah, very, very strong screen presence from this guy. And it, when he shows back up, he just keeps looking more and more monstrous. And the lighting, the effects are always just really on point whenever he's on screen. So he's very terrifying. So that's Samri. That's our monster. But you, to have an effective monster, you have to have a bunch of mortals that are in peril or cursed by said monster. And so the next major character of note here is Suman Singh, played by Ardi Gupta. She's our heroine, I guess. You know, she's born into a long line, a long cursed lineage of Singhs here. It's a very charismatic performance. She's a lot of fun on the screen. The actor here, Gupta, would come back for 3D Samri and also apparently produced a few films much later, including 2007's A Mighty Heart, starring Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, I think Ardi Gupta is great. She conveys a lot of emotion, especially in the musical numbers. Though I was wondering, do you know if the actors in this movie sing their own parts in the musical numbers, or are they sort of lip-singing along to professional singers?
It is my understanding, and again, I invite further education on Bollywood by anyone out there listening, but it's my understanding that it's usually not the actor doing the singing, that's added later. And I think that would make sense given that you, if there's no real division between films and musicals, it just makes sense to do that. And of course, this is not unprecedented in Western musicals as well. I mean, I think of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which is a tremendous musical, but George Clooney is not doing his own singing in that film.
And it works great in both cases. I mean, I know sometimes for some reason people talk disparagingly about lip syncing. I think they talk about it like that when it's like a band is faking doing a live performance, just like full on trying to trick people that they're playing live. But in a movie, no, there's no problem at all. I like it.
Yeah. And I imagine there are Bollywood films where at least some of the actors are doing their own singing. I mean, it makes sense. But I did not get a sense of that from looking at the credits for this movie. All right. So we have Suman Singh. She's our heroine. Her father, Thakur Singh, is played by Pradeep Kumar, who lived 1925 through 2001. This is Suman's father. A loving but overly protective father, but he's overly protective for reasons that go beyond the norm and get into the realm of supernatural multi-generational curses, as we'll discuss. But Kumar here is a veteran Indian actor with credits going back to the late 1940s, apparently highly regarded, though largely lacking in like highly successful roles. He often acted in period dramas and seems to have just always boasted a meticulously trimmed mustache, just a real, real gorgeous and stylish mustache on this man.
And it's a mustache of the thin style, which I feel like is hard to pull off, but it looks good on him.
Yeah, kind of like a swashbuckling old Hollywood kind of a mustache.
Yeah.
All right. So we have the daughter, we have the father, but now it's time to talk about the daughter's secret boyfriend, Sanjay, played by Manish Bell, who was born in 1961. He plays a low-born photographer, but he's handsome. He's a good lad. You know, he's our lover boy. This was only his fifth credit, but he went on to act in more than 100 pictures.
I think it's interesting that they try to, what seemed to me to like fit in a very standard forbidden love dynamic, even though it's only like a red herring. So like for the first bit of the movie, Suman and Sanjay understand that Suman's father disapproves of their relationship because she is a rich girl. She's from a, you know, a high class family and he's middle class. He's not rich like them. So that seems like a very standard kind of romance obstacle. But then there's a twist, which is like, oh, no, actually, he's opposed to their romance because there's a curse on the family. And if, you know, if she gets married, she may one day have a child and that means she will die. Well, actually, she will turn into like a witch and then die.
Yeah.
But it seemed interesting that it's almost like they were trying to fit like a second, like short romance movie into the beginning of this movie.
Well, it lets viewers know where they stand. It's kind of like Sons of Anarchy, right? You jump into watching Sons of Anarchy and it's like, oh, it's like Shakespeare bikers. It doesn't really hold on to the Shakespeare aspect of the thing for the most part. I guess it comes back towards the end, but a little bit. But it still, it gives you sort of an initial footing on which to proceed with the picture or, in the case of Sons of Anarchy, the TV series. All right, we've got the monster. We've got the father, the daughter, the daughter's boyfriend. Now it's time for the boyfriend's best friend. This is the character Anand, played by Puneet Issar, born 1959. He plays a best friend, martial arts and personal fitness enthusiast. The actor here, outside of this, is apparently well-known in India for his role in the Mahabharat TV show that ran 88 through 1990. He played Duryodhana, eldest of the Kauravas, one of the two feuding houses in that epic. He's also written, directed, and produced, and is especially known for his negative roles. This is a terminology I was not familiar with until I started reading about different Bollywood actors. But apparently, like, when you talk about somebody being like a great villain or being great at villain roles, you talk about how they're great at playing negative roles, which I thought was an interesting turn of phrase there.
So I thought Puneet Issar was one of the highlights of the film. Actually, so my favorite stuff about this movie is sort of like the tall macho guys in it. So I like the villain. And I love Anand. Anand is... So he's the main dude's best friend, but in a way it's a movie where the so-called sidekick actually does most of the heroism. It's like Big Trouble in Little China. And every time Anand shows up to save the day, it's increasingly hilarious. There's like an amazing scene where Sanjay is getting beaten up by 12 guys or so, you know, they're all wearing like these guys in fancy red footman's uniforms, these red jackets, and they're all ganging up on Sanjay. And then suddenly Anand appears sort of over the top of a mountain. He's like, comes up on this ridge overlooking the whole scene. And he's like, oh, my friend. And then charges down into the fracas to just slam me, just like beat all these guys up, which he can do pretty much single-handedly. He is the center of a number of martial arts scenes that I think are actually quite good. And there's also a really funny scene where they have they're on a road trip and they have a car, they have a flat tire, and it's clear that they staged this just so Anand could be like, hey, it's no problem that we don't have a car, Jack. I'll just lift the car while you fix the tire.
Yeah, and he's basically the action star of the film, while Sanjay is the romantic star of the film. And Anand, he's a lot of fun. These martial arts sequences are cool. He's got these really long legs, so he's one of these guys that when he's throwing kicks, it's like he manages to kick around you and then kick you on the other side of your face, kind of a thing. And he's also able to somehow pull off the leather vest over a bare chest look. He also wears a lot of fun T-shirts, but sometimes no T-shirt, just the vest.
In the scene where he intervenes to save Sanjay and beats all the guys up, I think he's wearing a sleeveless polo shirt tucked into jeans.
Somehow he makes it work.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Anand, his character has a wife, and the wife is Sapna, played by, and I'm mostly sure on this, this character and this actor was not listed in some of the databases I was looking at. So like not on IMDb, I had to go to another database. But Priti Sapru Walia, born 1957, I believe is the actor playing his wife. She wishes he was a little less into martial arts and personal fitness and more into lovemaking, which makes for at least one amusing sequence in the film. It's a fun performance. I think she has only a couple of scenes to really shine in, but she does shine.
Oh, yeah, she's good. It's a real bummer when the evil wizard throws her off the top of a building.
Yeah, though in a way it's like, you know, she's I guess she was doomed, you know, from the start. Like this, somebody's got to be killed by the monster. You've got to give, the certain plot elements have to be put in place.
The two main lovers go on a road trip with their two friends to go stop the evil wizard. What do you think is going to happen to the two friends?
That's true. Yeah. Now, do we have a creepy groundskeeper in the film? Yeah, we kind of have two of them because we also have a creepy woodcutter The creepy woodcutter I'll mention really quickly is Sangha, played by Satish Shah, born 1951. Basically, he's just a scarred woodcutter who really would like a bit of that treasure. But the main groundskeeper at the haunted mansion where everyone ends up is this character, Durjan, played by Sadashev Amrapakur, who lived 1950 through 2014. There's something about his performance. At first, I didn't pick up on it, but you know, he has kind of like a nice haunted vibe. He has kind of haunted eyes. And when I looked him up, apparently he made a name for himself playing villains or negative ones or negative roles in various films. In fact, I saw a 2014 Indian Express article that called him, quote, Bollywood's most memorable villain. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Not a villain in this, though.
No, just more of he's the local that is the haunted local who knows more about goings on than the main characters in the film.
At one point, he quite crucially hides a trident in a chandelier, and I did not understand why he did that, but it comes in later.
He just knew that it would come in handy later. Somebody's going to need to drop this chandelier. Sometimes I guess it's just the film logic of the thing. Now, there are a lot of other actors in this, and I'm not going to go through all of them here. I will say that we do have a bandit character named Machar, I believe. And he is played by this actor who went by the moniker Jagdeep. This is an Indian actor and comedian who appeared in more than 400 films, including, I think, some various Ramsey Brothers films. This is our sort of, I don't know, Benny Hill-esque misogynistic slapstick specialist that is brought in for at least two, maybe three long segments of the film that are concerned only with comedy, that do not really connect much at all with the rest of the film, and are really difficult to watch.
Agreed. I had read in multiple commentaries that the comedy segments are by far the low point of the film, and they are for the most part, extremely unpleasant, not funny, and just like a lot of jokes about sex crimes.
Yeah. So it goes beyond like, oh, well, this is out of keeping with the main vibe of the picture. It's just like content wise, it's gross. So I would advise if you're just casually watching this movie, you know, feel free to get up and get a snack during the comedy segments. Don't necessarily bother reading the subtitles during these segments, and feel free to skip them. All right. Finally, the music for Purana Mandir, Ajit Singh. I don't think I was able to find any dates for him, but he worked on subsequent Ramsey pictures as well, including Takana in 86, Purani Haveli in 89, and a Friendly Yeti movie that came out in 91 that looked pretty interesting as well. But the music in this picture is, I guess at times I loved it. It's a little abrasive. Like at times the synths come on really strong, but I still can't fault it too much. Like it definitely gets in there and it comes at you with its claws.
Oh yeah. I really liked a lot of the music. There's one theme that really stuck in my head that was not especially complex melodically, but it was just like a real rubbery synth tone as the characters were like exploring a secret passageway. And I was grooving on it really hard.
Samri has a pretty strong theme as well that I think it was Omar Khan compared it to the main theme from The Omen. Not that it's directly that or a reuse of that, but maybe has hit similar notes of that score.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
All right, so you want to talk about the plot now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so one thing is we absolutely cannot do the kind of granular commentary we do with some movies, especially like 70-minute drive-in movies, or this episode would be 6 hours long. And I want to say this is not only because this is the longest movie we've ever done, I'd also argue, I wonder if you'd agree with this, that it's in the running for the densest movie we've done, meaning that the amount of plot or stuff happening per minute of runtime is unusually high.
Yeah. Everybody gets their stuff in on this film. And again, it's having to deliver all of the various spices. So yeah, there's a lot that happens in this movie, and to just cover every bit of it, we just wouldn't have time for. And certainly we're going to skip over stuff like the comedic segments, which, you know, the less said, the better.
Okay, first of all, I like a film that begins by showing you its papers. The first thing we see here is a scan of the certificate from the Central Board of Film Certification of the Indian government. I seem to recall seeing similar paperwork at the beginning of like British movies from the 30s, like those old Alfred Hitchcock movies that show you the certificate from the British Board of Film Censors.
Yeah, I agree. I really like this. It makes it feel kind of like more like a cultural artifact, you know?
Yeah. So the narration begins, 200 years ago, Bijapur Sultanate was ruled by Raja Hariman Singh. In those days, the fear of ghosts and demons prevailed in the hearts of people. The most feared demon of all was called Samri. And as they mention these different people, we see like painted portraits of them. Samri's portrait has a kind of purple glow, so he is emitting rays of evil magic even in painted likeness. The action begins with a historical flashback where Hariman Singh is traveling with his daughter Rupali and his retainers when his chariot breaks down. Unfortunately, it breaks down in the middle of Samri's land. And even worse than that, his daughter wanders away while the carriage is being fixed. And fearing for her life, the Raja sends his men out looking for her. They are, of course, attacked and picked off by the evil sorcerer. And I just want to say this again. One thing I notice immediately about the opening segment is the extremely high energy editing and pacing of each shot. So the cuts between shots are frequent and the action in each shot develops very quickly. So it's this kind of near frantic pace for the first couple of minutes. But it's not just fast, it's also loud, full of like screaming and blasts of music, like slamming the audio into the red. It's just a lot.
Yeah. I've seen Sam Raimi's Evil Dead from 81 mentioned as an influence on the Ramsey brothers, as well as the films of Wes Craven. So I don't know, maybe we see a little bit of those influences in this editing style.
It's not going to keep up at quite this pace and level of intensity for the rest of the movie, but overall, for this film, the Ramsey brothers do stick to a pretty fast-moving and intense editing style. It always feels energetic. Things are always happening really quickly. There's not a lot of establishing or waiting around.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't have to wait to see Samri. He's there. He's going to disappear for a while for reasons that will that make sense. But yeah, he's there from the get-go, and you get a good look at him. And boy, he's just a great sight to take in.
As I said earlier, strong evocations of rock stardom. He's like, mm-hmm. he is singing devil music. But okay, Samri's running around. He kills all of Hariman Singh's men, and then he vamps Rupali, Hariman Singh's daughter. How are we supposed to understand what happened to her? I don't know exactly. Like, he leans over her as if he's biting her, and then there's blood on her face, and her eyes look different. They're sort of like her eyes have turned white, as if she's in a kind of magical trance.
One thing I loved about Samri just throughout the picture is I never really know what the rules are with him. He's just overpoweringly evil. He can drink your blood. But it's just, if he just looks at you, if you just think about him too much, you may just lose your soul. And then in terms of like what he is, yeah, there's the basic horror rises from the tomb, undead sorcerer aspect of the whole thing. But like, especially when he starts showing up later, I mean, he already has fangs at this point. And then later on in the movie, his body becomes even more monstrous in ways that don't line up with just pure, like, decay and resurrection. Like, his body becomes just increasingly, just materially evil.
Yeah, his later form is part Frankenstein, part decaying zombie, and part pro wrestler.
Yeah, with, like, some Bigfoot thrown in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, Hariman Singh comes back with his full forces and they capture the demon. They capture Samri, taming him with holy things. Like, there is a priest chasing him with a Trishula, the trident of Shiva. And there is an altar with a statue of Shiva, etc. And he's ultimately held in chains. They stand him up for a kind of trial while the accusations against him are read before the crowd. Basically, he did everything bad. He did murder, rape, cannibalism, all of it, all in service of his evil demonic masters.
I liked how the priest is reading these charges out and finally stumbles a bit reading the charge of digging up graves and eating corpses.
That doesn't seem like the worst of them.
No, but at that point, this is too far. We're not used to this one. We don't even have this one on the books. I'm not sure this is technically illegal. It's just bad manners.
Now, there was a cultural and language question here that interested me. In the English subtitles of the scene, it says that Samri is accused of using his satanic powers to create terror among the people. It says that he slaked his satanic thirst by drinking the blood of children. And it says he is so vile that even Satan would shun him. So given the Hindu context here, and it seems very much in a Hindu context, like there are other scenes where, you know, there are temples of Shiva, people offering prayers to Shiva in order to help them. I kind of wonder whether they actually said satanic and Satan in these scenes. I guess they could have, because I kept hearing a word in the audio that sounded like Shatan. So I was just curious what's going on here. Like, what is the most direct translation of what they're saying? Because, of course, in the context of like a Christian culture horror movie, it's very normal. Like, the evil sorcerer is understood to get his powers from Satan or some kind of demonic force. In the Hindu context, where does the evil sorcerer's power, where is it understood to come from?
Yeah, I had the same thought here. I thought, well, maybe they're just referring to mentions of Satan in Western films, which would have obviously been an influence here. And then I was thinking, well, maybe there's an Arabic loan word at play here. I looked up to some basic stuff in translation. Again, I do not know what I'm doing with the Hindi language at all, but it does seem like we do have this term, Shaitan, which means devil, Satan, freaks, beasts or demons. So I guess that's what we're talking about here.
Interesting. Okay. Well, again, Hindi-speaking listeners, please write in. Let us know.
At any rate, he's done all the bad things, and something's got to be done about it, right?
Right. So Hariman Singh's advisors, they argue about the best way to punish this evil sorcerer. The priest says, you know, why don't we burn him to ashes? That'll purify him with flame. Hariman Singh says, no, I've got a better idea. We're going to cut his head off and keep it in a different building than his body. And that way we'll know that his head and body can never possibly be reunited.
There you go. Sounds like a winning plan.
And then the holy man suggests using the trident, the Trishula, to guard his head. I think they're going to like lay it over the top of the box.
Okay. Again, sounds good. That's a good way to secure it.
Then the prologue ends suddenly. Lightning strikes and there are more credits. After these credits, we get the story picks up, but it's still in the historical prologue. We see them leading Samri off to his fate, and then they're sort of leading him in procession in chains, and then he stops to rage at everyone. Like, he rages at Hariman Singh, and he issues a curse upon his household, which is, he says that all of his female heirs will die in childbirth until Samri's head and body are joined again. Note that in the scene, they haven't been separated yet. Also, he says, on the day that his head and body are joined again, that will be the end of Hariman Singh's dynasty. I guess meaning he will destroy them all. Mm-hmm. Then they do it. They cut his head off and they bury the body in the ruins of a temple. They say it's Shankar's Palighat temple. And they take his head to throw it in a trunk wrapped with chains. And then they hide that in the dungeon of the Raja's palace. And then they, of course, put the Trishula, Shiva's holy trident, on top of the trunk, and they wall it up like Fortunato.
All in all, a pretty great historical prologue that then leads us into modern day, a.k.a. you know, early 80s Bombay.
Right. So we meet our modern day characters. There is Thakur Ranbir Singh. He is the descendant of the Raja from the prologue. So the curse has passed down through his family. He's a rich man. He loves his family, but he is preoccupied with fears about the ancestral curse. There is Ranbir's daughter, Suman, who is a college student. I mean, she's got a kind of sunny disposition. Mm-hmm. And her father laments her growing up because that means that she may marry and try to have children, and then the curse of Samri will kill her. Then there is Suman's boyfriend, Sanjay. Again, he is not rich, but he is handsome and brave, loyal, and scrappy. And then there is Sanjay's friend, Anand, who is a buff guy who cuts the sleeves off of all of his shirts. Not all of them. He's got some sleeves.
Yeah, some sleeves are kept, but most of them, they just get in the way.
So we see Suman and Sanjay being in love. They go out on dates. They like go to a pool party. They go out to a nightclub where there's a dancer dressed in gold. And here we get our first musical number.
Yeah, this is kind of a cabaret number. The dancer is Lena Das. And it's a pretty fun Indian disco type musical performance, I guess. I really enjoyed it. I turned the volume up a little bit on this one.
I was thinking, though, about this nightclub here. It's a strange mix of inside. It seems cool, but also claustrophobic. I think maybe the claustrophobic aspect comes from like the solid black walls and what felt like a sort of low ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got these cool, like, red bench seats and then posters on the wall for movies and stuff. Like, there's a poster for Superman up on the walls.
Yeah, yeah. And we get a little bit of Sanjay is looking at the dancer maybe a little bit too much, and Suman is a little bit jealous.
This is a recurring motif.
Yes. Whole songs will be sung about this later on.
So Suman and Sanjay are in love, but Suman has to lie to her father about where she's going when she heads out on dates with him. However, her father finds out. Ranbir is not pleased, and he forbids her to see Sanjay again. But of course, she's in love. There's no stopping her, so she's not going to just leave her boyfriend hanging. And so this is an ongoing conflict at the beginning of the movie. And again, as I mentioned earlier, there's a misunderstanding about the reason her father forbids the romance. She and like the young people think it is a class thing, that she's rich and he's not. Actually, it's a demonic curse thing, but they don't know that yet.
Yeah, he won't tell her about that. He's keeping that secret. Instead, he just says things like, hey, our family name is not so diluted that our blood can just flow directly into the gutter, and things like that. And, yeah. And of course, that just pushes her further away. He won't tell her the real demonic curse rationale that is behind his fear.
But then we get like a love song on a beach, or it's on rocks near the shore, where Sanjay is singing about his love for Suman.
Yeah, and it's nice. You know, it's like just a nice music video break.
Somewhere in here, we get the first martial arts scene. And this is with, so the basic situation is Ranbir, again, he forbids Sanjay and Suman to date, but then he catches them together. So he sends his men, who are all dressed up in these cool red jackets, to beat up Sanjay. And then Anand comes over the mountaintop and comes over like a ridge looking down on them and runs into the rescue. And then together they beat up all of the bad guys. I guess they're not bad guys. I don't know. The guys working for her dad.
They're just dad's goon squad that's to beat up Sanjay.
But we see a lot of signs of Ranbir's worries. Like, he has a freak out dream sequence with a giant beast Samri head. And this is where we start getting signs of what Samri will look like in his sort of undead form, which mm-hmm. is, again, less rock star and more kind of, Bigfoot pro wrestler zombie.
Yeah, just seething in darkness, just these great eyes, just in this pronounced brow. It's just a tremendous look. And I can just imagine moviegoers screaming when they see this on the screen.
But eventually the curse is revealed to Suman and Sanjay, and they have a bunch more, you know, back and forth about how Ranbir disapproves of them. But eventually, like, there's one scene where he's repeatedly getting a gun off the wall. But eventually he breaks down and confesses to them what's really going on. He explains the curse. And there are exchanges like one that was funny was he's like, it's a secret. And they say, what's the secret? And he says, it's one I can't reveal. And they're like, but you must reveal it. But then when he does, it's horrifying. There's a horrifying flashback to when Ranbir reveals that after Suman was born, her mother was transformed into some kind of devil creature with these long fingernails, these claws, and like barnacles on her face. And then she died.
Yeah, there's nothing. It turns out there's nothing ambiguous about it. I thought they were more setting up a situation where it's like, oh, your mom died in childbirth and there is this ancient curse thing. So I put one and two together. No. She like straight up practically explodes in some sort of like just awful, cursed flesh type of death. And it's a lot to watch.
Like, all the doctors and nurses run out of the room. There's no ambiguity.
They're like, it's magic. They're like, it's out of our hands. This is straight up wizardry going on in here.
So Ranbir explains to Sanjay, you know, if you really love Suman, you will leave her alone. Right. And so Sanjay does, because he really does love her. But then it cuts straight to Anand is lounging on a bed or something. He's wearing a sweatshirt and he says, so you left her, you loser. What'll she think of you now? Should we do a sidebar on Anand's shirts? He wears a lot of interesting shirts. Some of them have English writing on them and interesting logos and pictures and stuff. He wears one shirt that just says Styles, and he wears another shirt that says Golden Rule. He who has the gold makes the rules.
Very cool.
And it's weird because Anand in many ways does have a heart of gold, as we will see. But also he is, I don't know, he is in different scenes shown to be vain and highly covetous of money, even doing very shady criminal things to get money.
Yeah, though those occur either within or within close proximity to the comedic segments. And I'm never sure how much of that I should actually pay attention to. Like, does that count? Is that real Anand? Or is that like some different version of Anand just for the comedic segments of the movie? I don't know.
Well, anyway, Suman shows up and she's got a better idea than Sanjay just leaving her. She convinces Sanjay that they should break the curse. Hey, great idea. So it's now a road trip to Bijapur, driving down the highway in a red convertible. The road trip buddies are the four of them, Suman, Sanjay, Anand, and his wife, Sapna.
Yeah, so at this point, it's kind of a Scooby-Doo road trip kind of a movie, which is fun.
And all, you know, on the trip we see, Anand is such a good friend. Sanjay is like, why would you risk your life to help us? And Anand, I think, threatens to beat him up for saying this. He's like, hey, what are friends for? A friend has to help you break the curse on your family, even if that means laying down his own life.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this is funny. Sapna is happy to come along because she is confident that the curse is just Suman's father having a delusion. So I guess it's just a regular road trip for her.
Yeah. Just a chance to get out of town.
This married couple, they have extremely different ideas of the stakes of this road trip.
Yeah. He's like, I am ready to die. And she's like, I am ready to see the countryside. Yeah.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Meanwhile, Ranbir back at home, he has visions of Somri as in his kind of altered beast form and has a heart attack. He survives, but the doctors say he must rest. And I think they use this to explain why he doesn't chase after the youths to stop them on their quest.
Yeah.
But then we go into a part of the movie where basically the four friends are investigating the different settings. So they go to an old temple. They notice that the statue in the temple, which I believe is of Shiva or maybe of Shiv Shankar, maybe they say later, is missing its trident. And then, so they look around there. They have some visions of scary things. They drive around and just have encounters with scary people. Like they meet a woodcutter who just freaks mm-hmm. them out by smiling at them and holding an axe. And then finally they reach the palace and they explore that and meet Durjan the Watchman, who shows them around and tells them sort of the family history. And they start having repeated freaky reactions to portraits. Or I guess mainly it's just Suman that does. Like she sees a portrait of her ancestor and it zooms in on her eyes and it's going, wah, 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 wah.
Is this the scene where the eyes follow her and they do it by yes. having clearly two separate paintings, one with eyes yeah. looking straight ahead and one with eyes looking off to the side?
I loved it. I really like these scenes.
Because we know, the viewer knows, that behind that painting, behind the bricked up wall, is going to be the head of Somri sealed up in a box with Trishula leaned against it to keep it from coming out and wreaking havoc.
The next day, there's a funny scene where Sapna is annoyed because Anand won't stop doing workouts and martial arts. Like he's doing one-handed push-ups and mm-hmm. practicing martial arts. And she's just like, wow, really, really great romantic vacation you took me on.
Yeah, this is a fun sequence, though, because then she has this scene where she fantasizes about him being more into romance and less into personal fitness, mm-hmm. which I thought was pretty fun.
Then, oh my, here things start taking a left turn. Well, first, a bunch of guys from the forest attack Sapna from out of nowhere, and then Anand gets to come to the rescue and beat them all up. And then we go and meet this bandit commander who's, I think, giving the guys in the forest orders. It starts with a lot of over-the-top slapstick comedy and then descends into this rivalry between the bandit and a local official in the village. This is the barely related comedic side plot that we were discussing earlier. And to be frank, as many reviewers have mentioned, I found it extremely unpleasant. I'm not going to make much effort to recount it, but it's a lot of jokes about like a guy not having arms and another guy who does sex crimes.
Yeah, that's basically it. And they just keep driving home these plot points. And it's very skippable. I highly recommend you skip it if you watch this movie. But it really throws you off when you first hit it, because when the bandits' men show up, they have like dime store Halloween mask on the back of their head. And you're just like, what is happening? Did I switch channels somehow? Is this an error on the disc? No, you've just descended into the comedic subplot, but don't worry. You will eventually rise out of it, but then you're going to fall into it at least one more time. And then you'll fall out of it again without anything in the comedic plot ever really impacting the A plot or getting resolved.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of interaction. Like, it does develop to where the bandit and Anon have a Tuco and Blondie plot from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where, like, Anon repeatedly turns the bandit in for a bounty and then frees him before execution and then does it again to keep collecting money.
Yeah, and then the whole time you're just like, Anon, stay out of this subplot. You don't need to be here. Just stay in plot A with the rest of us.
So in this middle section, we get some delivery of lore from the watchman Durgin at the palace. He tells some backstory about the connection between the palace and the temple. There are also sections here where it seems like maybe the heroes kind of lose track of what the road trip was for. Like, instead of furiously hunting down the body of the evil sorcerer, like, Sanjay is fishing for food and Suman is doing like a couple's photo shoot of Anon and Sapna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like there's a curse. There's a deadline here, guys. We gotta stay on this.
Oh, but in this scene, it starts with a thing where there's a woman in the water. And at first I thought, oh, is she a mermaid? But she's like biting fish with her teeth and then trying to give them to Sanjay. And Suman gets jealous of this woman because she clearly is into Sanjay and she's like a beautiful local woman, I guess.
Yeah, beautiful local woman that maybe we're supposed to assume that she's kind of a bad girl, definitely a threat to their romance. But ultimately, we're going to find out she has a heart of gold, even if she's kind of like doomed to die. like other characters in the film.
General spooky doings are afoot. Suman has more freakouts when looking at the portraits. And then there is the blood shower scene.
Yes, I love this because, first of all, it's the middle of the night, time to take a shower. But Suman also is going to take that shower in a swimsuit. And you just know the way that the camera's zooming in on the shower head. I'm like, that water's turning into blood. There's no way that water's not turning into blood. And of course, the water turns to blood.
I knew exactly what was coming. But it's a pretty fun scene nonetheless. She's like, then in the tub screaming, covered in blood in the swimsuit. And then Anon and Sanjay run into the rescue and they like lift her out of the blood tub by her arms and legs and then put her directly on the bed. And I was thinking, oh no, you're getting blood all over the blanket.
That's a white blanket, y'all. Come on.
But then Durgin comes in to explain that the blood tub incident proves the curse is real. You know, you've got to take it seriously now. And I think he says, you've got to talk to the locals to find out more about the curse. And then intermission.
Yeah. So setting up basically like if this were a game of Arkham Horror or something, the research portion of the adventure where you just got to go around talking to people and find out how the ancient evil works.
So that comes into play right after the intermission, but it leads to a lover's quarrel between Suman and Sanjay, because Sanjay goes to talk to one of the local villagers, and who does he pick to talk to? Well, it just happens to be, Bijli, the beautiful woman who was bathing in the river earlier, and she's bathing in the river again, and he's like, hey, I need to, you know, talk to you about a curse, and she's like, Sanjay, I'd love you, marry me.
He didn't know his way around. You're supposed to go talk to the haunted drunk guy, old drunk guy in the village. He's the one who has the secret knowledge to share, but no, he goes to the attractive lady from the water that is also offering him drinks.
Yeah, so she takes him back to her house, gives him some kind of alcoholic beverage, and then he watches her dance in front of a fire. He's clearly being romantically tempted. Suman is jealous and heartbroken, and she sings, there's another musical number, she sings a forlorn song. I was wondering, did you detect this song maybe cutting off before the song was finished? Or, I don't know, it seemed like something was missing. It ended rather abruptly.
I didn't notice that. I'd have to go back and look.
Maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, after Sanjay finds out some more lore from the villagers, he returns to Suman and they reconcile.
Their love is tested, but remains strong.
Yes. Now, later that night, Suman is sleeping and then there's a cat scare. Like literally somebody throws a cat at her, just jumps on her bed and she like screams and wakes up and she's in a kind of... a daze wandering around. And then she ends up stabbing the portrait of Hariman Singh that's on the wall. And after this, Anand realizes, he looks up at the wall and realizes she stabbed through the wall behind the portrait as well. And then Anand and Sanjay bust down the wall. They investigate the secret passageway within. This is the scene where I mentioned there's some really cool kind of rubbery synth music. There's some cool bits like Anand gets a snake attack to the neck. A snake wraps itself around his neck and they have to fight it off. But then they find the Trishula. They find the trident of Shiva on top of the trunk wrapped in chains. They bust it open. Inside, they find the severed head. And Sanjay concludes that it must be the head of some brave soldier and it must be there out of respect.
Oh, Sanjay, you couldn't be more wrong.
Bad decision, yeah. But then there's like, so the woodcutter from earlier is looking on and he decides he sees the box and he thinks it's full of treasure and he wants treasure. So he comes back in the middle of the night to get treasure. And instead the head hypnotizes him and turns his eyes into ping pong balls and makes him attack people.
The ping pong ball eyes were pretty hilarious. And
yeah.
I don't think they were meant to be hilarious, but they're also out of keeping with what they did with other people's possessed eyes. Like they did some sort of like contact effect, I guess, with everyone else. But this guy got ping pong eyes.
Yeah.
And it's a questionable choice.
Like Rupali's eyes were creepy looking. They turned white, but they were, so those were different. He just has like, they're like bulging and they look like plastic.
Yeah. They're like, we couldn't get a hold of our contact guy for today. What else we got? What's the backup effect? It's ping pong balls.
This leads to a great chase scene that I loved. Yes. So it's like a horse-drawn carriage driven by the woodcutter, carrying the wizard head in the carriage, riding through the forest at night. And then Sanjay and Anand in a red convertible chasing after it. So it's machine versus horse.
It's great. But then there are also supernatural environmental effects that come into play as well.
That's right. So like the sorcerer's head, I think, causes a tree to fall down and block their path as they pursue the head so they can't keep up with it. Meanwhile, something happens in here where Dershan hangs the Trishula up on the chandelier.
Yeah, unsure why. He's kind of like, I got to hide this away for later so that it can play a dynamic role in the showdown or something.
Yeah.
That's so the only logic that makes sense.
So the hypnotized woodcutter like digs up Samri's body. I guess he knows where it is because the head has hypnotized him. Then he grabs the head. He puts the head on the body. He pokes himself with a dagger and bleeds on the neck stump. And this kind of glues the head back on. And then Samri wakes up. And now it's clobbering time.
That's right. It is on. Body and head are back together again. His body at this point, like I alluded to earlier, the evil is just completely manifest. It's now this hairy, demonic, Sasquatch, Frankenstein creature that ultimately really works. Like the way I'm describing it makes it sound like it's kind of patchwork and maybe, can't decide what it wants to be. But no, whatever it totally succeeds as being that. It's just this, this is evil incarnate.
Samri is wickedness and malevolence. Yeah, he's bad. Hey, everybody, we just had to take a quick break, but we're back now. So if we sound different, that's why. But we're finishing the episode. So, the plot is kind of in monster mode right now, isn't it? This is when the Frankenstein starts shambling around, grunting, looming, and killing people.
Yeah, Samri has returned, has full body again, has great lights and effects and synth backing him up. So it's just terrifying anytime he's on the screen. He's not interested in reasoning with anybody or negotiating. He is here to end dynasties. He doesn't care what has happened in the world over the past few centuries. He has a pretty straightforward agenda.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Like, he hasn't been around, so he doesn't know about the moon landing or anything.
No.
Okay, so, he's killing people. Unfortunately, he makes Sapna jump off the roof of the palace to her death. Bummer, I like Sapna. And then Anand is obviously very upset about this, so he, like, runs up to the roof of the palace to fight him, but Samri is gone. And from here, there is a blood sacrifice subplot. The villagers decide they want to do a human sacrifice of Sanjay and Suman in order to appease the monster and save themselves. And here we get a human sacrifice musical number, which I liked quite a lot.
Yeah, this one is good. I believe they're looking to sacrifice to Kali. And it looks like our heroes might be doomed once more, but someone comes to save them right in the nick of time.
Right, so they're like tied up, awaiting death, and you know the drums kick in, and then suddenly here's this lady from earlier, the one is her name Bijli, I think, the one who was in love with Sanjay, like mm-hmm. He went to her house earlier, and she's dancing around singing this. A very jolly, upbeat song about how the man she loved is unfortunately going to have his blood spilled, and she doesn't want that. And then there's a string of reversals. So first of all, she comes to save the day because she cuts Sanjay free and says she loves him and tries to let him free. But then he gets caught by the mob. But then her brother, who is sort of the guy leading the mob, says that he will still kill Suman unless Sanjay beats him in a sword fight. And then yeah. They get out there, they're fencing swords, and they fence for a bit. The sword fight is okay. It's not really on the level of Anand's martial arts scenes. And then at the end of the sword fight, Sanjay sort of wins, but the brother tries to throw a dagger at Sanjay's back to kill him. But yet again, the sister who loves Sanjay intervenes. She steps in front of the dagger and takes it for him and dies. Oh, no.
Yeah, bad girl with a good heart redeems herself through death. I also like that the sword fight, like you say, is very different from anything we've seen in the film up to that point. And it feels like, once again, this is the a little something for everybody going on, where it's like we need to have a traditional swashbuckling act in the picture, and this is the place to situate it.
Yeah, it makes sense. So anyway, Sanjay and Suman run away. The mob searches after them. There's kind of a lot of running around and hiding and chasing in the woods. And then here comes another Anand fight. Anand is captured by the leader of the mob, and then there's some fighting. Anand lets out some really weird martial arts moves in this fight. Like, there's one where I think he steps on a guy's head. It's kind of gross.
Well, he's just completely powered up with vengeance at this point. Like, he's more lethal than ever.
Right. And so he's angered by the death of his wife. He is motivated by defending his friends. So he's fighting super hard. And there's a really awesome moment where the leader of the mob tries to stab him with a dagger, but Anand grabs the dagger by the blade and disarms him.
Excellent. He just cannot be stopped at this point.
But unfortunately, even though Anand prevails in this fight, there is immediately more peril. So Sanjay and Suman are chased in the dark by Samri, the demon. And Anand comes to rescue them. He ends up giving his life so that they can escape, just like he said he would earlier. So a true friend to the end. Samri kind of strangles him, I think, and then his eyes turn white.
So now it's just our two lovers pursued by the demon Samri.
But an earlier character returns. So Suman's dad is back on the scene and he shows up. He's like, "Oh, better from my heart attack now." There is only one person who can beat Samri, and that is Lord Shiva. So cut to another musical number. Now Ranbir is singing to an altar of Shiva, or I think they were also calling this god Shiv Shankar, which I'm not sure, but maybe like a manifestation of Shiva, maybe like Shiva, the destroyer of evil, perhaps. I'm not sure.
At any rate, this seems like the right call. Get Shiva in on this. We're dealing with a pretty powerful supernatural evil force here. We're going to need just a little bit of help.
Right. Praying for the god's help. And we get cutaways to the surviving characters, but then also cutaways to like a bloody sheet, which is presumably covering up the dead body of Anand.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to say, on paper, just us describing this, you might question whether it makes sense to throw in a religious musical number this late in the film, building up to the final showdown with the monster. But I thought it would work. I thought it really worked because the musical number itself has this way of kind of revving up and has this kind of rhythmic quality to it. Kind of works the people in the scene into a frenzy, to unleash our would-be monster slayers. And you feel a little pumped up. You're like, let's do this. Let's finish this up. Let's get Somri.
Absolutely. I mean, as I said, again, I mean this unironically, I fully encourage more filmmakers to make horror movies that are seriously scary, but also have musical numbers. I think that's a great idea.
Also, it's probably a good way to overpower some of our traditional Western movie villains, like Jason Voorhees. How's he going to react to full-blown musical numbers? He's not going to know what's hit him. This is better than like psychic powers.
I would love that. Yeah, a religious musical number before somebody goes up against Jason, where they're like invoking the power of Christ.
You know, we had something kind of similar without the music in The Devil Rides Out, right? They basically have a Sunday school lesson before the big confrontation to set everything right.
We should mention, by the way, that the lyrics of the song point out remind the audience that the statue of Shiva is missing its trident. And this gives Sanjay the idea that the way to destroy the monster is to use the Trishula, which was hidden. It was in the hidden passage behind the painting on top of the trunk that had the head in it. And so Sanjay and Suman go looking for the trident. So there's a bunch of more scares. They're like looking around in the palace and they are screamed at by taxidermied animals, and Somri appears. He chases them around. He is about to, in the very last moment, hypnotize and vamp Suman. But then Sanjay sees that the Trishula is hidden in the chandelier and he wields it. He drives Somri into his coffin and they trap him inside with the power of the trident. And then the villagers come, collect the coffin, take it to the village square. Then they tie Somri to the stake and burn him. Huge burning fire, and the demon is vanquished.
Yeah, they burn him up, and Dad's there pumping his fist in the air as the monster burns.
Yeah. In the end, Ranbir accepts Sanjay because now the threat to his daughter's life has passed. So he says, "I'm proud of you, son. You destroyed the curse that haunted my family for 200 years." And then this is one of those cases where he says something that he just said again, but in English. So he says in English, "I'm really proud of you, my son."
It's not such a sweet ending. You know, granted, a lot of people died to get us here. But it's a getting back into like just the straight family melodrama aspect of it. It's a nice place to end things.
Yeah. So Sanjay and Suman, we see them married, and then it ends very abruptly. I was kind of thinking there would be an ending music number, you know, mm-hmm. but there was not. Or am I remembering right? Was there? I don't think there was.
I don't think there was a full on musical number to end it out. It was just kind of like we end on more of a traditional note where good is victorious, and they kind of get a nice snapshot of everyone together, and then we close it out.
So all in all, I greatly enjoyed Piranha Mandir. Again, great love story, great evil wizard, good family melodrama and stuff. Love the musical numbers, comedy segments, awful. Martial arts, awesome.
Yeah. And then, of course, the monster is amazing. So all in all, I feel like this was a pretty solid entry into Bollywood horror. So who knows? I have to do some more research. Maybe at some point in the future, we'll come back and do another Ramsey Brothers film. There's also, I'm blanking on his name at the moment, but there was another top tier competitor to them that put out a number of movies as well. And some of those looked interesting. So who knows? It's either way, I'm glad we got to dive in to the cinema of India here on Weird House Cinema. And once again, if you want to get into some of this, I have to point out there's an Instagram account for Bollywood Crypt. And that was one of the first places I started looking around. I found that account and I was seeing what this account was sharing related to Bollywood horror and kind of getting a taste for what seemed to be important. And then from there, I found out about this awesome Blu-ray set that's out from Mondo Macabro. I recommend checking that out. And if you're in Atlanta, like I say, you can go to Videodrome and rent some of these bad boys. They just got them on the shelf. All right, we're going to close the book here, but we'd love to hear from you out there. Again, if you have experience with Bollywood cinema in general, Bollywood horror specifically, or you know, particular memories or things to share about Purana Mandir, let us know. We would love to hear from you. In the meantime, we'll also remind you that Stuff to Blow Your Mind is primarily a science podcast with core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Mondays, we do listener mail. On Wednesdays, we do a short-form artifact or a monster fact episode. And on Fridays, we set aside most serious concerns to just talk about a weird film on Weird House Cinema. You can look us up on Letterboxd. That's Letterboxd.com. We have an account there called Weird House. And we have a nice list of all the movies we've covered over the years. You can pull them up, and you can also organize them in neat ways. This is how I was able to really quickly see, like, what is the longest film we've ever covered and what is the shortest. Without a doubt, Purana Mandir is the longest, but only beats out Blade by 20 minutes.
All right. Huge thanks to our excellent audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.